And Sunday, east winds 10 to 20 knots, decreasing to 5 in the afternoon. The wind waves 3 to 4 feet in the morning, becoming less than 2, with a west swell of 4 to 6 feet at 16 seconds. And for your KSEO King of the Hill traffic update, we've got a few things to report here. Looks like we've got a traffic collision at Fairview Road and Fallon Road. This is in the Hollister-Gilroy area. There was an ambulance responding. It happened at 9:49, and CHP just got on the scene. It's a vehicle versus a telephone pole. So that's what we got so far. If I see anything else, I'll let you know. And if you see anything, give me a call at 475-1080, and I will report it. As far as current temperatures go, we've got Watsonville at 51 degrees, 59 degrees in Monterey, and 48 in Salinas. We are at 54 here in Santa Cruz, right outside KSEO Studios. The official time is 10:07 and 11 seconds on this Saturday, January 22nd. Up next, Saturday special. Stay tuned. KSEO Santa Cruz, I'm Nikki James.
What a pro you are. You stretched it out.
I timed it. I timed
it out an extra minute, huh?
I did. I went as slow as possible. I just kind of waited till I saw the door open.
This is good. This is good. May I ask you a personal question?
You tend to do that.
Are you in as good a mood as I am today?
That depends. I need to know what kind of mood you're in, like why and
a sunny mood.
Oh, I know.
It's nice and sunny.
I really,
it has been for
really
many days.
Love the weather right now. I'm very happy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Can you fit that nice music? It's not.
Is it too loud?
No, it's too low. It's too low. We need to hear.
Yeah, that's
Let's
good.
Bring it up a little bit more. Thank you. That'll make me feel even better.
I know.
And when the host of the show feels better, it tends to make for a better show.
True.
No?
True.
Yeah. Okay,
yeah,
good.
Totally.
So how was your week?
My week was, kind of boring, but it was sunny.
Oh, well, we're going to take care of that.
All righty.
On the Saturday special today, okay?
Let's do it.
Good morning. A brighter day is here. Good morning. May we bring you cheer.
We've got time, we've got tunes, we've got time, tunes, and temperature.
Get up and go, it's today, you know, on KSCO Radio.
I think it's fun to ask personal questions of Nikki, the pilot in command. In fact, it's a blast. Maybe we'll start asking personal questions to the audience. We could make a whole show out of that. Huh. All right, well, welcome to the Saturday special. It's the end of the donut, so I'll fade up the thing here.
Good morning. Now stay right here on KSCO Radio.
Hey, pilot in command.
Yes.
Who's in charge of seeing to it that the chairs in the studio are safe?
Are safe?
Yeah.
I don't know if we have a chair safety inspector or not.
Yeah, we need to get on that right away, because I lean back and I have this sinking feeling that I'm about
so
to...
If the
back is about to go out of the chair, which means my back will go out when I fall backwards.
All right. Well, I'll keep a song ready in case that happens.
All right.
Oops.
So, you know, no particular topic for the Saturday special today or guest, but I was thinking that, the whole week has been fraught with, discussion of healthcare, Obamacare, repeal. And so forth, and I haven't heard too much from people about what simple things should be done to just fix the damn thing and have it all be over with? To me, the most important thing of this whole thing, they didn't even need to make a big Megillah. All they needed to do is just make it illegal for pre-existing conditions you know what I'm trying to say, don't you? Pre-existing conditions should not be a reason for insurance companies to be able to exclude you, okay? And the other thing is that they need to open up, you know, real competition. Everybody who wants to be in the healthcare business should be able to compete widely throughout the country and not just in certain states and get permissions and, you know, grease people's palms and government's palms and so forth in the process of doing that. I think it's real, real simple. Do you think it's too simple? Anyhow, that's what I figured that we would talk about. And I called someone who is in the healthcare, who's a healthcare practitioner, and I've never asked him his feelings about this whole topic. And I believe he's going to be calling in any time now, because he told me he would and weigh in on this topic. But in the meantime, I've learned something else. I've learned that MSNBC fired Keith Olbermann yesterday. And it was a big surprise to Keith Olbermann. I think it was announced like, you know, 5 minutes before the show was about to end that it was going to be his last show. And that's a pretty interesting development in the world of media. Don't you think? Yeah, and I didn't know that until my mother told me that on the telephone today. And that sort of makes me want to change the whole direction of what I had planned to talk about here on the Saturday special right here on your favorite radio station. But we could talk about all of that. So in any case, let's – my friend whom I called is he's called here, and let's welcome Rob Roberts back to KFCO. Hey, Rob, how you doing?
Hey, Michael, how you doing, my friend? Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, and yours too. Yeah, thanks for calling in, and you know, your fans here in KFCO land, I'm sure will enjoy hearing yours. And a lot of people they know you as a very popular talk host on KFCO from the 90s and repeated guest appearances on KFCO in the last decade or so. But not too many people know or remember that you, your profession is you're a nurse, and you are a traveling nurse right now, right?
Yes, I'm a registered nurse.
Uh-huh.
And RN, and I specialize in the practice of oncology and bone marrow transplant. I also do sometimes I take an assignment in a hospital and work in my secondary specialty as a medical surgical floor nurse. But yes, my practice is mainly centered and focused in the practice of giving chemotherapy oncology.
Right. And so you've always done that. I mean, for as long as I've known you, but that wasn't the topic of your talk show back in the days when you were a KFCO host and a very popular one.
Well, I think you're being too kind, but, you know, I had an opportunity to express some personally held beliefs that were at contrast with, some of those that are generally held by a large portion of the population, like for the fact that you can be an African-American, which I am, and although I prefer, to box myself in as an American, first and foremost, who just happens to be black, but I'm also very, very conservative, and as you well know, and that I have a great faith in Christianity. So I mean, I'm probably what you would what the media likes to say we are today. I guess I'm an evangelical Christian, and I also happen to be a Tea Party conservative or a constitutionalist.
Okay, great. And so has your politics changed at all? Have you gotten more conservative over the years?
You know, you know, I'm pretty much day to day. I think I've probably meddled a little bit on some things. I'm pretty much, I refer to myself personally to my friends, as a constitutionalist. I don't call myself a Republican anymore, because I think the Republican Party has really gone away from a lot of the values.
Amen.
Over the past couple years, that I hold very, very dear, and they're very, very important to me. So I refer to myself, politically wise, as a strict constitutionalist.
Okay. And I think that's great because, let me just ask you, point blank here, what's your solution for the healthcare crisis? And just give us your ideas. Give us your ideas. Does it have to be all complicated like everyone's made it?
No, I think it's pretty simple.
Yeah.
First of all, whenever you're talking about healthcare, you have to talk about you and you have to talk about me, and let me further define it. You and I are bona fide card-carrying members of the baby boom generation. And this year, this is kind of very, very important because it's a landmark. For the first time this year, the first of the baby boomers, are turning 65 years old. I was born in 1956, so I'm a little bit toward the middle, and kind of toward the middle tail. And I'll be 55 in April. But the first ones, they're about 10 years ahead of me, are turning 65 this year. That's important for one reason and one reason only. The baby boom generation is the largest generation in the history of this nation. Depending upon who you talk to, we're going to be between 46 and 52 million strong. And unfortunately, or fortunately, however you put it, our generation is characterized by, kind of like a trifecta. First of all, we ate too much. We saved too little as a group, as a whole. And our life expectancy increased significantly. Like for my dad's generation, I believe, in my lifetime, we've gone from about 68 years old, or actually 62 years old, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, when they first came up with Social Security, where now the average American man, life expectancy from average American man is something like about 76, 77 years old, and a woman is slightly higher.
Right.
Now, the reason that is important, okay, when you're talking about health care, is because with the retirement age of Social Security being raised to about 67, the baby boom generation, that's you and me, Michael, we can reasonably expect to live somewhere in the neighborhood of between 18 and 22 years past 65, once we hit the age of 65, okay? So because we took care of ourselves, we're a highly educated group as a whole, and our life expectancy has increased exponentially. Well, the reason that's bad, okay, is because it's going to put an enormous, a ginormous amount of pressure on the healthcare system. And the way it's constituted today, it won't last. I mean, because our generation is going to bust the bank. We're living longer, we're healthier, but we're also demanding more from health care than any other generation in history. For example, as an oncology nurse, I deal with people that have cancer, and which is a very intense emotion, but it's also, for me as the healthcare professional, but it allows me firsthand to see some of the worst things that are inherent in our nation. For instance, we need to have a generational and a countrywide conversation and debate on death. And let me be specific, because I'm thinking about someone that I'm, a lady that I'm taking care of right now. Okay, I just happened to give her chemotherapy the other day in the clinic. She's 57 years old. She has metastatic breast cancer, metastasized to the bone. And then yesterday she got some really particularly bad news. She had a CT scan on Thursday, and now it's metastasized to her liver. That's a death sentence, and any doctor that tells his patient otherwise is lying to you. Once you have a metastatic cancer to the liver, you know, we're talking a couple months here. We're talking weeks. Here's my point. She has insisted upon, up to this point, I don't know where she's going to go from here, but she's insisted that we do everything we can to maintain her life. Okay, that's great. We you know, we live in a great country, and we have the best healthcare system in the world. However, that's extremely expensive. She's been getting a regimen of drugs every time she comes in, basically. Into the clinic, we're talking about $5,000 to $7,000 per visit. So she gets chemotherapy in cycles, which is administered in cycles, usually about 3 to 4 weeks. So let's go ahead and round it off and say that with all the drugs plus the, you know, the radiological studies, you know, CT, PET scans, and the lab visits, we're taking care of her and maintaining her life at the tune of about $10,000 a month. Now, this particular lady has happens to have private insurance. And some of those expenses are picked up by Medicare. Some of them are not. My point being, okay.
Medicare at the age of 55, you said?
57.
Yeah, I didn't think Medicare kicked in, at least currently, until, what, 65?
Well, yeah, it does if you can prove that you're indigent, okay, and you spend down, and there's ways to get around that as well, okay?
Great, I didn't know that, Rob. Thanks for letting us know.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. You can definitely apply. But in this particular case, we've been spending about $10,000 every other month or every month to maintain this lady's life. And quite frankly, from the beginning, she had a very poor prognosis and a pretty poor outcome could be expected. But she insisted that we do everything for her. Now, this is America, and that's her right. Okay, but I think I know as a nurse, Michael, we have to have a debate on how much money we're going to be able to spend. I mean, because the money when it comes to health care is not infinite, it's finite. Okay, we have a certain amount of money that we can spend. And, I mean, there's a lot of corruption in Medicare, and there's a lot of waste in the medical system. I can tell you that firsthand. You know, being a registered nurse, being an RN, having been practicing for quite some time, I can assure you. There is a lot of fat. There's a lot of things that can be cut. But I think at the heart of the problem when you're talking about health care in this country, Michael, is, where does it end? When somebody comes in and they're diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, which quite frankly is a death sentence, the five-year survival rate for pancreatic cancer is less than 5%. Okay? So, but people come in. And they insist that we give them chemotherapy. They insist that we give them radiation, even after having talked to the doctor, and they know they have a poor prognosis, and maybe oncologist has told them, you know, even if we do everything that you want, you're going to live maybe 7 or 8 months from today. And they insist that we do everything that we can, even though it may cost tens and even hundreds of thousands of dollars, and I'm not exaggerating it because it often does. When you're talking about some of these upper-end chemo drugs, you know, for some of these particular diagnoses, you know, of leukemia, colorectal cancer, pancreatic cancer, brain cancer, breast cancer, these are all very, very drug-intensive, interventional-intensive diagnoses that require chemo radiation, which is very, very, very expensive. And for people that don't have private insurance, Michael, these hospitals and these clinics are picking up a lot of this stuff. Medicare pays for some of it, but not all of it. And, you know, my question is, and, you know, I'm going to pose it rhetorically to you and your audience, is at what point do we start to say no? Should we say no to people who, I mean, have been given a diagnosis that indicates that they're going to die, quite frankly, and die in under a year, let's say? Do we want to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, maintaining some semblance or some quality of life for people with these diagnoses? Number one is my question. And number two is, should we? should we do that? Do we have an obligation as a society to do that? Now, there's been a lot of talk, a lot of drama here about this new health care bill that's just been passed, Obamacare, about death squads or death panels or whatever. Let me tell you something. As a nurse, it is my job to routinely talk to my patients and their families. I'm required to do so by law now and talk to them about palliative care options, you know, about hospice options, okay, where, you know, Medicare has a hospice option right now. This is for people that have been diagnosed for less than 6 months. The government will pay for a hospice option, which can be extended ultimately, but it usually has, you know, it requires a validation from a doctor that, yes, this person is going to die in 6 months or less. And the government comes in with this Medicare-sponsored hospice option, which, quite frankly, is it allows people to die in their homes with dignity, provides a visiting nurse, provides the drugs, provides infusion as appropriate, you know, certain levels. And the government picks up the tab for that, okay? So, I mean, right now I'm talking to people about their options, about hospice, and quite frankly, how do you want to spend the time that you have left? Do you want interventions, or do you want to simply die without interventions? I'm doing that now. I'm required to do that now by law. So I don't know. Am I on a death panel? I don't know. You know, but I do know this, that I'm required to talk to my patients about, you know, impending death now. And
Rob, I think what people mean by death panel is what you as a system being changed from what it is that you've been doing and have been and continue to do now to a system where you have asked the rhetorical question to me and to the Saturday Special KSCO audience, how much is enough? That's where I think the term death panel really applies.
Right.
There is no current limit right now, to my knowledge.
There is none.
Yeah, and now you were asking the rhetorical question, should there be? I'm going to put it right back to you, Rob. What do you think about that? Do you think there should be a limit? And if so, what should the limit be?
Great question. Thanks a lot for pinning me to the board. You know, as a traveling nurse, I've had an experience. I've had the opportunity. I have a breadth of experience, perhaps, that most other nurses who do my job don't have. You know, I worked 13-week contracts with all of the United States. I was just in Washington, D.C., I worked 13 weeks there. Before that, I was 7 months in Seattle. I worked at the Veterans Administration Cancer Infusion Center there. Before that, I was at Dallas, Texas, VA. You know, so I move around. I've worked at approximately 19 different hospitals in the past 5 years. So it gives me it's provided me an opportunity to, you know, to see how other folks do things across the country, across the nation. It's provided me a breadth of experience. And that a lot of other healthcare providers, nurses specifically, because we're speaking contextually in this regard, I'm an oncology nurse, don't have. They work in their own hospitals, say like you in Santa Cruz. They work at the oncology center in Santa Cruz Hospital, and that's all they do, and that's all they know. They know Santa Cruz Hospital, but I know hospitals across this great nation, you know, many, many more, and I've had a lot of experience and. So I have an opportunity, and I've had, you know, have an experience that most don't have. I know how other people think. I know how other people do things. Now, having said that and set the table, let me, get to your question. Yes. Let me answer it. As a healthcare provider, yes, we have to set a limit. Example, because so many I've, you know, had over the years, and I'm going to throw this out to you, and then, you know, you tell me what you think. You tell me if I'm wrong, okay? And I'm only going to set the table here because...
But are you going to give me a limit? Are you going to give me what your limit is?
Yeah, I'm going to give you what my limit is.
Okay,
I'm
good.
I'm
all ears, okay, Rob. Give it
okay.
to me.
Okay, because I know you and I got pretty emotional a couple years ago over this Terry Schiavo incident.
Yeah, we sure
so let
did.
Let me set this out. True story, a true vignette, only the names have been changed.
Rob, won't you answer the question first and give the story afterwards?
Okay, I'll answer the question.
Yeah.
You know, I think that you have to set limits, definitely have to set monetary limits. You have to set limits as to the amount of care that you're going to provide to someone who has a diagnosis of, let's say, a pancreatic cancer. I think that, you know, you have to, you know, particularly when you're talking about taxpayer dollars. Now, I mean, you know, the argument is
only when you're talking about taxpayer dollars.
Exactly.
Only, and, not particularly, only.
Okay, let's talk strictly about taxpayer dollars. Let's talk about Medicare, because I can speak with specificity to that. Medicare usually will reimburse doctors, and let's speak contextually in my specialty, because I'm a cancer nurse. The cancer drugs, very, very expensive drugs. There is no such thing as a cheap cancer drug. I want to make that clear. Everything costs at least $1,000, okay, and, you know, and up. That's what we're starting off with, you know, with milligrams.
Rob, I love you, but I wish you'd give me your limit first without all this
other
stuff.
Okay, so what do you want me to say?
What's the limit? You said there. I got a part answer out of you. Yes, there should be a limit.
Okay, so you want me to give you a dollar limit?
Yes, a dollar limit.
Okay, I would say that, and just speaking in my specialty, because everything is so, you know, expensive, and I want you to understand this. Okay, it's totally different from, you know, someone else. You know, so, you know, some other specialties. Say someone got their arm cut off and, you know, and they were in a trauma and they're in the ICU. I'm not talking about that. Let's stick strictly with oncology.
Right.
I would say that, you know, we need to put something like about a, you know, I feel comfortable with about a $100,000 limit with Medicare when you're talking about taxpayer dollars. And, you know, per patient over, you know, over the period, you know, from the time you're diagnosed. You know, to the time that, you know, the cancer is either cured.
Thank you. Okay. We got an answer. We got an answer.
Okay.
And I appreciate all the background material because that's very educational because very few people in the audience know what you know. So thank you. And thank you for that answer.
Okay.
So $100,000. And obviously, if a person, wants to, deal with a, insurance company, a private insurance company, they can buy whatever premium or less than premium plan they choose to.
And I want to make something clear to you, Michael. Cancer treatment, depending upon your cancer, whether it be, a blood cancer such as leukemia or colorectal cancer, all these treatment options, some of them can run into millions of dollars.
I believe it.
Depending upon, you know, how long you have it.
In a flash, that can happen. I know
real
that.
Quick.
And I don't. And I'm not
real
a nurse.
Quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Real quick. You can go over $1 million, like, you know, in about 18 months. You know, 2 years. And you know, I mean, working in the VA for our veterans, let me tell you, they have virtually unlimited resources when it comes to our veterans. And I have no problem with that. I think those that serve our country and put their lives on the line for our country deserve the absolute best, and we have a commitment to them. But even then, talking about the VA, our soldiers, when I worked in Seattle, they got the most expensive drugs, the best drugs, and the best treatment. And the government doesn't give a damn about how much it costs.
Oh, should that change, Rob?
You know, you're talking to a veteran.
Yeah, should that change? Just yes or no. If you need time to think about it, that should change.
Yes.
Should that change? Should that go to a $100,000 limit also?
I don't think it should go to a $100,000 limit.
Because people who fight for the country should have a higher limit, probably, right?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, how much higher?
Good question.
500,000? 500? A million? What should it be?
I would probably say that the people of the United States owe their warriors probably a limit of about, let's go ahead and say about $1 million per man or woman. I would say $1 million should be capped at about that.
And if you reach the cap, then sorry, you've reached the cap, and we love you, and we thank you for your service, but see you around. See you in the next
world. That's where I think that, you know, we need, as a society, need to have a debate. I mean, there's a lot of things we can do. We can offer some, reduced things. We can offer some financial, help, but at a reduced rate. I mean, you know, Michael, you only have so much money. There's only so much pie available.
I understand.
Okay.
I know. No. I'm really appreciating this, and I'm steering you into giving us some
your opinion here.
You're not steering me. You're painting me into a corner, daggone it. Right. And, you know, I know it's not going to be popular with a lot of people,
yeah.
but I want anybody that's listening to understand that I'm looking at this every day. I see this every day. I see the problems. I see the waste. You know, I see the, you know, this, the headlong, pell-mell, continued rush, you know, into providing, you know, grade A care for everybody, you know, thinking that we have all these resources. And I got to tell you, people, we don't.
Yeah, I think people know that. They know that, Rob.
We don't.
Okay, we're talking with Rob Roberts, my good friend and a friend of KSCO land for many years, a very popular talk host from the 90s. And Rob currently travels around the country as an oncology nurse and does stints in various cities. Or right now you're pretty not too far from your home city of in South Carolina, is it?
That's correct.
Uh-huh.
I'm working in Asheville, North Carolina right now, an infusion center, and uh-huh. So I'm able to come home every weekend, so it's really nice.
Okay, caller wants to know what Rob's salary is and if he's willing to reduce his salary.
Good question.
You like that
I'm
question?
I'm glad that question comes up because, funny, I was just thinking about that this morning
uh-huh.
in anticipation of talking to you later on today. I make anywhere in the neighborhood of about $80,000 to $115,000 a year. It ain't enough. Right now, my current job assignment, I'm making $43 an hour. It's not enough. I feel that I should be compensated at the rate of what I do. I'm a highly trained, highly skilled, highly educated, and I might add, highly competent professional health care provider. I've gone to school for a number of years. I have an indeterminable amount of hours of experience, and I've taken additional classes to, you know, to supplement my knowledge and to make me a better nurse and better able to deliver a higher standard and quality of care to my patients and their families, to which I'm committed. I don't think $42, $44 an hour quite covers it. I think I should be working for no less than $65 an hour. Okay? But I'm not. I'm doing something that I love. I feel reasonably compensated for what I do. It's very important. I hold the lives of patients and the hopes of them and their family in my hands every day. That's an awesome responsibility. Hell no, I'm not willing to take less. Let me put an emphasis on that and say it again. Hell no, okay? I'm not willing to take any less.
Right.
I'm not being paid to the level that I deserve right now. And I'm speaking just about myself. I'm not speaking about all the other oncology nurses across the country. I'm sure they feel the same way. We work long hours. You know, in the clinic that I'm working at right now, just to let you know, I'm the only registered nurse in the clinic. Okay, I work directly for an oncologist. Okay, he does calculations. Most of these chemotherapy drugs, Michael, are dosed per meter squared, you know, per body surface area. He writes an order. I don't just do what he says. As a nurse, I have to go over his calculations and check them. The doctors make mistakes. Hey, folks.
Wow.
I need to tell you, doctors make mistakes. Uh-huh. It's the nurses that are going to save your lives, not your doctors. So he writes an order, and I have to look at the drug, okay? I have to make sure that his calculations for that particular patient are correct. I have to review that patient's lab to make sure it's safe to administer that particular drug. I may have to actually draw the blood from the patient. Okay, then I have to go talk to my pharmacy tech and tell her to order the drug, make sure that it's there, okay, on the day that the doctor wants it administered. We talk to the patient. The patient comes in. They're all scared and anxious. Okay, Rob, this is the first time I've ever had this drug. And, you know, the doctor told me a little bit about it, but then I have to sit there for 30 or 45 minutes, which is part of my job that I really, really love, and do patient teaching. There may be two or three other family members there, you know, maybe the husband, maybe the children, and everybody wants to know what you're going to do. What is mom going to get? Okay. What type of drugs are you going to give her? What type of effect are they going to have on mom? Is she going to lose her hair? Am I going to be able to have sex with my wife during this treatment? Are we going to be a danger? All of these questions are most of the time not answered by your doctor, but are answered by your oncology nurse. And I'm speaking in terms of my practice right now. It's the nurses that do do the teaching and educating in this country, not the doctor. Doctor comes in the room in the hospital, sees you for 5 minutes in the morning, says, how the hell are you doing? Okay? Talks to you for maybe 5 or 10 minutes. It's that nurse, however, outside your door who's there on the 12-hour shift or the 8-hour shift who's going to see you 2-3 hours a day, not the doctor. Okay, so it's the nurses that make this system go in this country. Now, back to my, you know, a question that your caller asked. In this particular clinic, in this current assignment, I have to do it all. And that's part of my job as a nurse, multitasking. I have a number of things that I need to do from, hell, I'm a janitor when I need to do it, okay? You know, I mean, I open the clinic, I close the clinic, I clean up messes, you know, I check the doctor's calculation because as a nurse, I'm the last barrier between harm and my patient. Just because the doctor writes it and says give it doesn't mean that I give it as a nurse. Okay, I'm the check on the doctor to make sure that he does his job or her job properly, okay? And then before that drug goes in the patient's vein, I have to access them, start an IV, access their implanted port or whatever have you. But as a nurse, I'm doing a myriad of things. The doctor sits and he writes an order, and then I have to do about 20 different things, you know, to make that order come to fruition. So, hell no.
Okay. I'm not gonna take point, less money. Point established. We're talking with Rob Roberts about the healthcare system and the actual process that, thank God, most of us are not aware of, and hopefully will not be. But there's a good chance that, that the longer we live, there's a greater and greater chance that we might come into contact with this first. That music from Nikki indicates that there is a break time coming up. We hope you will stay tuned. And after we come back from this commercial break, we will go to the phone lines. Rob, I assume, can stay with us some more time here. Right, Rob? Because I'm sure there are already some people. We haven't even put the phone number out. But we already have several phone callers, and several have dropped out. But Kara and Felton and Bob and Pacific Grove are patiently waiting. So the least we can do is get to them right after these words from our advertisers here on your favorite radio station, AM 1080 KSCO. Back in a few.
Winter is the time to make certain your home is safe and ready for the long, dark nights. Hi, I'm Charlie Friedman.
And I'm Tino from JM Electric. Charlie's right. Get a free, no-obligation electrical safety assessment from JM Electric. Listen.
My name is Lane LeCompte, and I live in Soquel. My home is about 45 years old. There were a lot of things I was wondering how my home was still standing. And I want to make sure that my home is safe. Oh, they came out. They were wonderful. They really took care of everything, of all of the items we had. Yes, I sleep very well after the work that they did.
Don't wait until you blow a circuit. Call for a free, no-obligation electrical safety assessment from JM Electric today.
I'll personally come out and walk through your home to see if I can spot any trouble before it happens. I'm Tino at JM Electric, 422-7819. That's 422-7819 or jmelectric.com and tell them Charlie sent you.
Well, I'm sure you must have heard this again and again.
What would you get if you combined the great taste of that breakfast drink Tang along with 187 different vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, enzymes added in the healing properties of green tea?
Flowerpowerdrink.com.
Let me share with you a new tasty treat idea. Take one packet of Pollen Burst energy drink and pour it into a hot cup of water. That's right, a hot cup. Mmm, tastes delicious, especially in these cold, chilly days. Or instead of a cup of coffee or tea.
Flowerpowerdrink.com.
Long-term sustained energy without the jitters. It helped people lose weight and gave more cellular nutrition than the best multivitamin known to man.
Flowerpowerdrink.com.
The natural energy drink polymers. Try it, you'll like it.
Flowerpowerdrink.com. Do you know the fastest way to lift your spirits? Light a candle, add a little warmth and beauty to your home or office. A candle is a candle is a candle, right? Nope. There's paraffin, there's soy, and now something new. Gourmet candles made by Longevity's new partner, Isola Luce, with 100% pure palm oil. Palm wax is denser than soy, so it burns longer. Isola Luce candles do not use dyes or wicks with lead. They're made with cotton wicks and natural oils, so they burn cleaner. These candles are so fragrant, you don't even have to light them. I like exotic flower scents like Maui plumeria and freesia with tuberose. You might prefer ocean breeze, pineapple and vanilla sugar, or one of many other choices. These are classy candles you'll be proud to show off or give as gifts. Each candle comes nestled in a satiny box. Call us now, toll-free, 888-245-0300. That's 888-245-0300.
Bumper music goes so long, but your selections are just so perfect. How do you do that? Thank you, Nikki. Welcome back to hour number one of the KSCO Saturday Special. MZ here with you, 10:47 a.m., I think. Is that the right clock? Yeah, 10:47, 43, 44. And we're talking with Rob Roberts, and we're talking about what he thinks should be done to the healthcare system. And you said to me at the top of the program, Rob, that it was very simple, but you didn't give me a simple answer. but I appreciate all the background you did give us. Kara in Felton has called, and so has Bob in Pacific Grove. By the way, if you want to call, phone number is the same as always, 479-1080 in Area 831. So if you're outside of Area 831, if you're listening to us from anywhere in the world on KSCO.com, you can call Area 831 in the United States, 479-1080, and become part of the program. So, Kara and Felton, welcome to the Saturday Special with MZ and Rob Roberts.
Hello.
Hey.
Thank you very much for taking my call, and I have to say that's what my mother said to me about my little sister and by regarding the music.
Oh, yeah, right.
Anyway, this is a very passionate area for me, as well as a lot of things are. You know, it's like regarding healthcare, except for in birthing and young children, healthcare is basically towards the end of life is kind of what we're talking about. And the doctors and everything focus on the end of life. But what about through the middle of life? You know, it's like, why is everybody getting sick? Well, there's genetics, okay, that plays some role in it. But it's food, it's air, and it's like very few people will really get a grasp of how important this stuff is to keep from getting sick. And it's like life is up, okay? Life is up into the 70s, 80s, and 90s now. But what about the quality of life? Like that lady that's, you know, not very old, you know, like 57, 58 years old, and she's got a torn rotator cuff, and she's got all this stuff going on, and basically she can't work, you know, with all these issues. So the difference is the quality of life then, rather than just having all these people alive. For me, it's a very tough thing to put where the life, end of life stuff is. Sorry, I'm nervous. But I think, I feel, and I know this stomps on a lot of people's rights, you know, freedom rights and all that, and but every person should get the paperwork for this end of life stuff. You put it into policies, you know, insurance policies, you put it into schools, you put it in jobs, and that makes sure everybody gets it in America that you need to discuss this.
Karen, no one would argue with that. But
yeah.
what about the discussion that we're having right now about should there be a limit to what should be spent, especially if the taxpayer, no, if the taxpayers are footing the bill?
Well, it's very hard. I mean, you know.
Because there's a limit when you, most insurance policies do have an upper limit of how much they're willing to pay out.
Right.
And when you reach that limit, sorry, I mean, you're at the end.
Yeah.
So do you have a question? Do you have an answer for that? Because I finally did get an answer out of Rob. $100,000 for someone who's not in the military, and maybe $1 million for someone who is.
And I feel that's very low, considering how high prices are.
Okay.
For the cost of drugs and stuff.
So you think there should be a limit? And if so, what are your limits? And do you distinguish between non-military and military people?
No, I don't distinguish. I think everybody should get the best care. But on said that note. You know, it needs to be not the amount of money. It needs to be how realistic you're going to get in the prognosis. You know, if you're dealing with somebody that's terminally ill, come on. Why do all this stuff?
Well, that's all Rob has said.
Yeah.
Rob, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still there, and I'm just listening to this lady, and, you know, I think she's made some wonderful points. However, I'd like to correct her. First of all, it's my contention, unlike that of John Lewis, congressman from Georgia, who's a buffoon, and also that ignorant woman from Texas, Sheila Jackson Lee, both of whom happen to be black Americans, unfortunately, liberal blacks who made the statement yesterday that, you know, that it's against the 14th Amendment, and John Lewis making a statement that health care is a right guaranteed by the Constitution. It's not, people.
No,
for every American that's out there listening, I got to tell you do not have a right to health care.
That's right.
You don't have a right. That's my point. That's my contention.
Right.
Healthcare is not a right, okay?
You know, and it should be
something that you pay for.
Right.
I mean, if you can afford it, and I think the government has an obligation to a degree to provide you with, you know, rudimentary healthcare. But when you're talking about spending millions of dollars, that's on you.
Yeah.
Okay, sell your house, go into debt, get a loan.
Yep.
And if you can't afford it, then you need to have a come-to-Jesus moment mm-hmm. and decide what exactly it is you want out of the time you have left, or you're predicated on, like you said, your prognosis.
Yes.
So I just want to make that clear to people that listen in the audience. It is my point that health care is not a right.
Mm-hmm.
It is not guaranteed to you. And then once we get past that and get over that hurdle, then I think we can have an intelligent, emotionless conversation about where we want to go with our health care in this country.
And I agree with that 100%. And bottom line is, it's five letters. Truth. Tell the people the truth. You know, what's going on. You know, how long you have to live.
Okay.
How much it's going to cost. They don't want to tell you the truth. So, you know, it's just a mess because nobody wants to tell the truth anymore about anything. And that's my comment.
Thank you, Kara in Felton. Appreciate the call. That opens up a line at 479-1080, 479-1080 in area 831. We're talking about solutions to health care. Give us a call. Join the conversation if you care to. It's not very often that we have Rob Roberts on. He's very articulate, and he's very involved in the health care industry. Bob in Pacific Grove, it's your turn. Welcome to KSCO. You're on.
Yes, well, I was going to just putz in my garage and listen to you a little bit, and then when you finally pinned him down, said, come on, give me a number, and just before he said it, I said, about $100,000 out of work. When he said $100,000, okay, I got a call. I was in healthcare my whole life, you know, management level in hospitals and stuff. And to put it all in perspective, it's a real simple thing. Every one of us, every director, everybody that I knew, knew that when you're walking down the hallway, and if since it was all stressful jobs, and all of a sudden you that heart starts going and you fall over, I don't want to look up and see some a plastic surgeon or a retinologist with a $2,000 suit. I want to see an RN. So just so you know my perspective that, you know, why I've been paying attention so much. And, Rob, you are hitting the nail so much right. I mean, you know. You understand. I worked for Tenet, worked for NME, for Humana, for, you know, a whole bunch of these companies. and you're just right on the button. You make less money than a guy driving a bus in San Francisco. And
that's
you're
right.
Their lives are in your hands just like ours. I came up through Biomed. Every instrument that touched anybody in there was downline of people like me. When I retired 12 years ago, I was making about 75 grand a year. So, anyway, I wanted to let you know that I had to call and you said 100. I guessed 750 on the military, but man, I'll buy a million now that you talk about it.
Well, I mean, it's always been my contention, Michael, and to our wonderful guest,
Bob.
I make no mistake. I mean, and I want to be clear. Veterans in this country, people who serve our military, deserve the absolute best. And if other Americans have to do without to support our veterans, then they're going to have to do the hell without. Because we have kids over in Afghanistan and Iraq right now who are dying for this country, for the freedoms that people enjoy over here and take for granted. Those people that serve our nation in the military deserve the absolute best. And yes, at the expense of other Americans, they deserve the best that we can give them. And, quite frankly, no expense should be spared for them.
Do you want to alter your million-dollar limit?
I'll give you an opportunity if you want to. Let me tell you, I'm taking care of a lot of Vietnam veterans right now in the Veterans Administration because of Agent Orange. It's really coming home to roost. A lot of these young men, 57, 58 years old, coming up with stomach cancers, they're coming up with brain cancers, colorectal cancer, pancreatic cancer. A lot of our veterans who served in Vietnam. What do you tell a guy that is a Vietnam vet? Well, sorry, your chemo runs out next week. No way, baby. Okay, his chemo ain't never gonna run out if I'm running things.
Well, wait a minute. What if the $1 million mark is reached?
Then we, like I said. We go the extra yard for our veterans. Unfortunately, most of these guys have this Agent Orange stuff and some of the cancers they have, the leukemia. They run their course and they never come close to $1 million. These poor guys and some of the gals right now that I'm seeing more and more women veterans, by the way, with cancer. Unfortunately. It's a very, very virulent type of cancer that they're getting, and they're gone within 12, 18 months. They're gone, okay? And that requires you having to make some hard decisions. Do I want to go through radiation? Do I want this poison pumped in my veins, Michael, when I know it's going to make me sick like a dog? I'm going to lose my hair. I'm going to drop 70 or 80 pounds to get another 6 or 7 months of life. Is that worth it? Again, these are debates. This is a conversation that we need to have. And like that lady that called earlier said, tell them the truth. And the truth is not being told to the American people.
You tell the truth.
Are most people
in your position not telling the truth?
You know, most of the nurses that I work with, and every year there's a study that's done, a nationalized study on the most admired profession. Okay, and with the exception, of 2000, when we had 9/11 with the firefighters, nurses are number one every year. Every year this study is done, nurses are number one, and doctors are way down the list. There's a vast discrepancy, usually about 16 or 18 points. There's a reason for that. Because people and I hate to use his name, but our president, I'm not even going to call him by his name, I'm just going to say our president. He has a big affinity for nurses because his daughters were hospitalized in Chicago, and he's made the comment several times before, along with his wife, how important nurses are, to the healthcare field. Now, having said that, let me get back and make my point real quick.
We have less than 30 seconds to go for the news. We'll hold you over to the till the next hour if you're willing to stay.
I'll stay for a couple more minutes.
Right.
We have to make some hard and fast decisions, Michael, because there's only so much we can only slice the pie so many ways. I mean, we have to make some hard and fast decisions.
Okay. Okay. Good. Well, that's Rob Roberts. He's going to stay over. We've got Fox News coming up in 15 seconds. We have David and Felden, who will be the next caller right after Kay's commentary, top of the next hour.
David
is a five-time cancer survivor. You're listening to KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, San Jose. It's 11 a.m. Here's Fox News.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Stanley. With the new Congress just seated, the 2012 presidential election has already bubbled to the top of the political agenda. And right now, in New Hampshire, Republicans are conducting a first-of-its-kind straw poll aimed at handicapping the first-in-the-nation primary just over a year away.
Some of the candidates on the straw poll ballot, Mitt Romney, of course, former House Speaker Newt Gingrich, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, Alaska's Sarah Palin, Congressman Ron Paul, former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty, and Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels. But today's vote will not give much insight into the thinking of New Hampshire's all-important independent voters. They make up roughly 40% of the Republican primary electorate in that state.
Fox's Steve Santani. Some 500 members of the New Hampshire state GOP are taking part in that poll. Iran scuttles crucial talks on its nuclear program by insisting on preconditions the rest of the participants won't accept.
Nuclear talks with Iran ended in Istanbul without resolution today. The P5 plus one, permanent five members of the UN Security Council, which are the U.S., France, Britain, Russia, and China, plus Germany, say they presented some clear proposals for ways Iran and the group could build confidence. Iran said it would not negotiate unless sanctions against it are lifted, and its right to enrich uranium is acknowledged. That is not something the P5 is prepared to do, so these talks broke up today without further plans for another meeting. In Istanbul, Turkey, Amy Kellogg, Fox News Radio.
Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords, now at Texas Medical Center in Houston, spending a couple of days in intensive care for evaluation before she's sent to the center's rehabilitation hospital. Right now, the extent of her injuries from that bullet to the brain she suffered 2 weeks ago today in Tucson is being determined. She still hasn't spoken, and it's not clear whether she'll have permanent disabilities. Her new medical team says she, quote, has great rehabilitation potential. You're listening to Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
The judge goes primetime. Every night at 8 on Fox Business, he's challenging big government, exposing shady DC deals, and defending your rights all week long. Freedom Watch every night at 8. Plus, Eric Bowling's at a brand new time, keeping you in the know with all the shocking stories of greed and corruption around the country. Don't miss Follow the Money, weeknights at 9 and Thursdays at 10 on Fox Business, the power to prosper. This country is about hard work and forward thinking, building, growing, and that it's called the American dream for a reason. It's why Fox Business pushes the limits.
This administration chooses policy over people.
Close to $4 trillion in federal spending.
Contrary to what Washington wants you to believe, times are tough.
Calling out corruption and standing up to government overregulation. And we'll never quit. It's why we move forward. Fox Business Network, the power to prosper.
Sergeant Shriver being laid to rest today after last night's wake at D.C.'s Kennedy Center and today's Maryland funeral. One of the last links to the John F. Kennedy administration and the new frontier era, Shriver died last Tuesday at age 95.
Hundreds gathered at Our Lady of Mercy in Potomac, Maryland to remember a man who dedicated his life to service.
As to love with all my soul.
Bono and folk singer Glenn Hansard sang at the services. Shriver, a brother-in-law to John F. Kennedy, was the first director of the Peace Corps. He was involved with the Special Olympics, which was founded by his late wife, Eunice Kennedy Shriver. Shriver's daughter, Maria Shriver, remembered her father.
The programs he fought for, the ones he created, they still have impact as we stand here.
Shriver was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 1994. He announced several years ago that he was suffering from Alzheimer's disease. Sergeant Shriver was 95 years old. Karen Riegel, Fox News Radio.
An explosion ripped through a five-story shopping mall today in the central Russian city of Ufa, igniting a fire that killed two people and injured five others, the flames engulfing the entire mall. The cause of the blast is unclear, but an official with Russia's emergency ministry says the fire appears to have started in a third-floor room reserved for smoking water pipes. Some lawmakers in Hawaii decide to separate religion from their official business.
The Hawaii Senate will no longer start its legislative day with a prayer. Lawmakers passed new rules that end the longtime tradition. Senators had considered allowing non-religious prayers, but church groups argued that clergy can't be restrained from talking about their higher power. Senators say they made the change over fears they might be sued. The Hawaii House is considering a similar rule change.
Fox's Todd Starnes. Thousands of protesters in Yemen have turned out at a university in the capital, Sana'a, to call for the ouster of the country's president after 32 years in power. Just last week, protests in Tunisia drove out that country's president of 23 years. Chris Stanley, Fox News Radio.
Good morning, everyone. You're tuned in to KSCO 1080. I'm Nikki James. Got your forecast here. We're going to have sunny skies today. High of 69, light winds tonight. Mostly clear, low of 43 and light winds. On Sunday, mostly sunny, high of 70, light winds. Out there on the Monterey Bay, the northeast winds, 10 knots, becoming northwest in the afternoon. Wind waves less than 2 feet, west swell 7 to 9 feet at 17 seconds. And tonight, northeast winds, 10 knots, wind waves less than 2 feet, a west swell of 7 to 9 feet at 17 seconds. And Sunday, the east winds 10 to 20 knots, decreasing to 5 in the afternoon. Wind waves 3 to 4 feet in the morning, becoming less than 2 with a west swell of 4 to 6 feet at 16 seconds. For your KSCO King of the Hill traffic update, got something to report here. There's a traffic collision with minor injuries at 10:38 this morning. This is on northbound Highway 1, just north of State Park Drive. And CHP is on the scene there. It is a solo vehicle, a blue minivan, hit a tree, and they're still working on that one. Also, nothing. There's supposedly a traffic hazard on 152 just west of Mount Madonna, but it's not giving me any information. So that's what I got for you so far. You can give me a call at 475-1080 if you see something out there, and I will report it. I got some current temperatures here for you. Let's see. We've got Monterey at 63 degrees. It's 54 in Salinas, 56 in Watsonville, and we are at 59 here in Santa Cruz, right outside KSEO Studios. Official time is 11:07 and 18 seconds on this Saturday, January 22nd. Up next, second hour. Saturday special. Stay tuned. KSCO Santa Cruz, I'm Nikki James.
Oh, hello, darling. I hate to hang up on you, but I'm sorry, baby, but I have to go. It's time for that wonderful record show. I'd love to visit, but you'll have to call back.
Okay, here's what's happening now. We're going to do a latest case commentary. Then we're going to finish up maybe two or three phone calls on the topic from last hour with Rob Roberts. Then we're going to change gears.
I'm sorry, baby, but I really got to go to KSCO Radio. Bye.
Is a KSCO commentary. Here is Kay's Whirling.
No one can disagree that ours is the most generous nation in the world when it comes to helping other countries, especially if they are the recipients of very bad luck. Like Haiti, for example, when 1 year ago an enormous earthquake devastated the entire country. Throughout this year, we have been reminded via TV that in Haiti, millions became homeless, streets are filled with mud, safe drinking water is still not available, much sickness prevails, and as we speak now, the disaster remains exactly the same as it was 1 year ago. What is wrong? Compassionate Americans, as usual, early on have given millions to help the Haitians, yet they're still homeless and nothing has been rebuilt. Clearly, the answer must be the money sent to the leaders went into the pockets of corrupt people and not to the suffering victims. This despicable scenario happens every time. We are too trusting and we never learn. I submit, we Americans must never again send money to the leaders of an injured or destroyed country. Instead, we should use those millions meant to help the poor with American builders to go to Haiti and rebuild everything themselves. This way, the Haitian people can have homes built for them, water made safe for them, streets, schools, and hospitals built for them in a timely manner. Also, our government sent many trucks to help clear the enormous debris. According to U.S. media, they have never been used in this entire year. They remain in ports because the Haitian government demands import taxes like 40% to allow the trucks into the country. How can the Haitians be helped when their own leaders create such insane restrictions? Let's stop being naive and stupid when dealing with various disasters in other countries, and let's stop trusting corrupt leaders. There is a simple solution. Let's never again send money. Instead, send workers and materials. For KSCO, this is Kay Swirling.
I'm real proud of my mom. I think she's great. What do you think? 479-1080. All right, back to our topic here with special guest Rob Roberts, former KSCO talk host, hopefully future KSCO talk host.
Hey, let me tell you something. I really enjoyed your mother's commentary. I happen to agree with her 100%. The hell with Haiti. I mean, the hell with giving money to these people. And you know what really got me upset about the entire Haiti situation?
What?
Those two ex-presidents, Clinton and President Bush, they got on there and they did their show, and all this money came pouring in, and now it's been going into the pockets, like your mother said, of corrupt individuals. They got a couple hundred brand new Ford trucks sitting there at port, can't be used. They had it on Fox News the other day because the damn government, like your mother said, is requesting a 40% import tax. You know what? The hell with these people. Let them manage their own disasters, you know. I mean, I'm sorry. You know, I'm a Christian person, and I don't mind helping my brother when they need to, but I mean, some of these governments, just like in Afghanistan, where we're going, where we're spending blood and treasure, these people have a total culture, different culture than we have. They're total corrupt. Karzai, filthy corrupt, okay? And he's been taking money, hard-earned taxpayer dollars, and, you know, been going into the pockets, you know, for nefarious operations and for nefarious purposes. And, you know, I mean, you got to draw the line. Again, times are changing. We don't have all this money. Just be giving it and throwing it away, like your mom said. I just love her. She's just. And when are you going to send me my book? I heard your mom wrote a book, and you're supposed to send me a copy of it.
Yeah, we're get. They're supposed to be delivered. No, okay. I'm stammering because I'm really embarrassed and ashamed. We've been selling advanced copies to get some idea of how many we should order, you know. And the damn book should have been here by now. They're not going to be here till mid-February, we just found out. We just have two or three, you know, copies to, you know, sort of
play with.
Well,
you make sure that when it does come in that you take a copy to your mother, and please, please beg her to, you know.
I won't have to beg her. I won't have to beg her. She loves you. She will, you know.
Okay. I want an inscribed copy because, I mean, wow, what a volume of common sense that's going to be, you know.
Right.
Gee whiz.
Okay. Thanks, Rob. Let's go back to the phone lines. David in Felton, a five-time cancer survivor. Welcome to the Saturday special, David, and happy you're doing well, I hope, I think, right?
Hello?
Hi, you're on. David, can you hear me?
Yes.
You're on the air.
Okay. Two of my cancers were treated by surgery, were less than an hour each. Two of the skin cancers and the topical chemo.
Uh-huh.
And the last one, skin cancer that I treated with hydrogen peroxide. And a friend of mine also treated the cancer. The key here is using oxygen to kill the cancer. There's two clinics in California where they have people breathe pure oxygen. They're in a chamber, and they raise the pressure three times normal, which would be 45 pounds per inch. So
that's a hyperbaric chamber?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And the last that I've done a lot of research, and the last one is vitamin C intravenous, which it gets into the system and then changes to a chemical that kills cancer.
How old are you, David?
Huh?
How old are you?
I'm 86.
Oh, wow. When did you have the first cancer? And now you've gone through five.
This has all happened within the last 5 years.
Oh, I see. Wow. So up until your 80th birthday, you never had cancer,
any
serious health challenges?
I'd had pneumonia that almost killed me when I was 15.
Right. Well, happy you're doing well. Thanks for sharing your experience.
Well, I just want to let people know that not to be afraid of cancer, just to know how to do it. These hyperbolic oxygens are Newport Beach and
There used to be one in Pacific Grove, and I don't know if it still is.
Yeah, Monterey.
Monterey Pacific Grove area. Yeah. So that's real close to us in Santa Cruz, and it's right smack in the middle of our listening area. So that's good. Well, appreciate the call and continued health to you. Okay.
Yeah, my doctor says if everybody's healthy as I am, he'd have to be selling papers.
Okay, great. Thanks for your call to the Saturday special. Take care. Bye-bye now. Here's Craig in Santa Cruz. Craig, welcome to the Saturday special with MZ and Rob Robertson. It sounds like you've turned your radio down.
I'm not in Santa Cruz.
Oh.
But anyhow.
It must be Craig and Campbell.
Yeah.
Hi, Craig and Campbell.
Hey, Michael. I have a question for Rob. I've been reading a couple of these doctors out there that are saying, they're more natural medicine type doctors, kind of, on the same lines of Joe Wallach, but they're real MDs. And they say they don't have a problem with chemotherapy, those type of drugs per se. The problem with them is what they're saying is that the dosages are like way high, like 10 times more that should be administered. Like the people, they should be losing their hair and this and that. And like I say, their main beef, what I'm reading in the literature, is that the chemotherapy dosage, the radiation dosages are just way too high. They shouldn't be getting these really horrible side effects. And I just wanted to ask Rob what he thought about that.
Well, good question. Let me tell you, I can be very succinct and tell you, it all is driven and dependent upon when you're diagnosed. I just got a guy in when I was in Washington, D.C., 67-year-old African-American guy, wonderful guy, smoker. Two-pack smoker all his life. He's been healthy. And I remember this with specificity because it was such a sad case. He's diagnosed right before Christmas with stage 4 cancer. Okay, stage 4 means your cancer has been growing for quite some time. You have quite a good-sized tumor, and it's likely metastasized to other organs, or musculature or the bone in the body. In his case, it had. Okay, so if somebody comes in with stage 4 cancer, which is a very, very advanced cancer, you have no choice. You have to get, medieval, okay, as far as your treatments are concerned. So normal chemo dosages, for someone that's newly diagnosed, are going to, of course, you're going to have to be much more, focused, much stronger, much more intense if you want to give the patient some type of life. Quite frankly, in this particular case, the patient didn't have, much of a chance of surviving more than 4 or 5 months anyway. That's something that his doctor should have told him. I'm not sure that they did. I think in this case they did, but the family said, to hell with that. We still want everything done. Well, this is America, so we don't refuse people that. So we went ahead and we're spending several hundred thousand dollars basically to radiate a dead man walking, three, four times a week, with levels of radiation that are just, almost on the, on the ethical boundary of whether or not, we should be doing this. But in order to give this man maybe 3 or 4 extra months of life, which his family demands, they demand. Lung cancer is going to kill you. Any doctor that tells you other than that is a damned liar, okay? You get a diagnosis of lung cancer. If I get a diagnosis of lung cancer today, I'm cashing in my insurance policy and I'm going to Disneyland because I am going to be dead in 6 months. I am not going to put myself, through 67%. Of a fatal dose of radiation 4 times a week to get, 3 or 4 extra months of life. But that's me. That's my decision, okay? And, that's my decision that I'm going to make. But in this particular instance of this individual, he was sick like a dog. Eventually, right before I left a couple of weeks ago, the cancer metastasized to his brain. So to answer your question, frankly,
You know, the doses of chemo and radiation are driven by when you're diagnosed. If you're diagnosed early in the cancer in stage 1 or stage 2 neoplasm, you're going to have lower doses. It's going to be much more effective, and you're going to have much more of a sunny outlook and a positive outcome and a prognosis. When you're late diagnosed, late in the game, which most Americans unfortunately are because they don't go to see the damn doctor, okay, and when you come in, you know, and, you know, you've been coughing up blood for 3 or 4 months and you haven't gone to a doctor, and you come in and all of a sudden you got stage 4 lung cancer or stage 3 lung cancer, yeah, I mean, you don't have a good prognosis. And these people are insisting that we, the healthcare industry, do everything we can for them. I mean, they don't want to hear they got 3 months to live. They ought to go to Disneyland. They're saying, give me everything. Give me all the radiation. Give me the max amount of cancer. So, yeah, in order to have any type of hope, and it's a false hope in a lot of cases, you have to get medieval with some of these dosages and radiation and also chemotherapy. So, yeah. When you're diagnosed, drives, okay, if you go see your doctor, you notice the warning signs, and you go immediately into your doctor, and you're diagnosed at stage 1 or 2, much lower doses, much less side effects associated with the treatment regimen as opposed to when you're, you know, late diagnosis in the stage 3 or 4, when you have to. I mean, if you want to have any hope of saving people, you have to give them these large doses and these really aggressive protocols.
So you don't necessarily agree with these doctors. They're making a blanket statement. What you may do, you may yourself give a lot lower doses, but out there on the average, the norm out there across the country, these guys are saying is that the dosages of the radiation that's really needed, you know, and the chemo is it's like way out of line. It's way off the charts. Like it should be a lot smaller. That's what they're saying, kind of.
Yeah,
what I'm getting.
Agreed. But yeah, but I want to make sure you understand it's all driven by when you're diagnosed. The earlier in a disease that you're diagnosed, the less radiation. Let's talk lung cancer specifically. You have trouble breathing, and so you right away you go and see your doctor, and he tells you got stage 1 lung cancer. Yes, it's going to require less radiation. We can cobble together a protocol and a treatment regimen for you. There's going to be less, have less associated side effects because your disease was caught early in the game. But if you come in late like this guy who's been ignoring, the signs, he's coughing up blood and he's not going to see the doctor and he continues to smoke and he continues to drink and he doesn't do what his wife begs him to do. Honey, please go see the doctor. He says, I'll be all right, cough, cough, as he hacks up another mouthful of blood. And he waits 4 or 5 months after the first incident, and then he goes see the doctor, then yes. Okay, he's not going to be able to get low-dose radiation because it's not going to be effective because of disease.
Yeah, those are the kind of people. Those are the kind of people that it bugs the hell out of me that you throw good money after bad. People who did it to themselves, you know.
Hey, Michael, type of people, that's the majority of our healthcare costs.
Okay,
country.
Well, I wish you would have said that at the beginning of the program because, you know.
Yeah, I kind of understood what you said the first time. It sounds like the people you're talking about, it's like almost like an emergency situation where you
I give chemotherapy to lung cancer people to continue to smoke and drink. I don't think I should have to do that. I think we have a national debate on that. But, I mean, at that point, what the hell are you going to tell people? They already got stage 3 lung cancer, and they're going to be dead in less than a year. So what do you tell them? You know, stop smoking? What good is it going to do? They're going to die anyway. So, I mean, you know, at that point, you know, where do you, you know, I mean, if there's a line to be drawn, you know, to me it's kind of wild. I mean, it's arbitrary and capricious. I mean, it's not going to accomplish anything. However,
it's not too arbitrary if you're dealing with someone like that. Who did it to themselves. Anyhow, Craig, want to thank you for your call. Okay,
right.
I was just going to put the lady from Carmel in, and she hung up. So what a shame. All right, Mike in Scotts Valley, you're next with Rob Roberts, and then we're going to put Annalise from Soquel on. Then we're done. Then we're done with this topic.
Okay.
We're going to move on to the other topic.
Sounds like a plan.
Okay, Mike, you're on.
Hi, Michael and Rob.
Hi.
Hey, Rob had said something earlier about if you catch lung cancer, you might as well cash in your life insurance policy and go to Disneyland. My mother caught lung cancer in her late 50s, and And she was a smoker all her life. She started back when they had no filters on cigarettes. And once she had discovered that she had the lung cancer, she immediately quit smoking, which, you know, big deal.
Well, but, at least she did. A lot of other people don't because they can't or whatever. They're weak or whatever. But
well, she went up to a hospital in San Francisco, and they gave her radiation, and they took one of the lobes out of one of her lungs, and she lived for another 25 years before the cancer came back. So she died in her late 80s, and it was from lung cancer. And at the once she got to that point, she said, no, the quality of life is not worth it, and I don't want to die in a hospital. So she ended up dying in her bed. But and she knew it. She said all during that time, I'm living on borrowed time. But the fact was that she didn't have to cash her life insurance policy, and she got 25 excellent years out of her life after the first diagnosis.
And that's wonderful, let me tell you. But normally, and I'm speaking in generalized medical terms, physiological terms, you know, again, your mother may, and I'm not familiar with her personal physiological history, but it sounds to me like she caught her disease pretty early in the process. And in that scenario, there's a number of things that can happen. Number one, you can have a surgical alternative, like you talk about. Your mother had what was called a lobectomy; they removed part of her lung, and surgical resection, a removal, you know, of a lobe or two in the lungs. When it's caught early, okay, yeah, you can have a great outcome like that, okay, like you just described with your mother. But that
my only argument was, I heard your statement as a flat statement of fact, I knew of
Can I qualify that statement? Most of the people that I work with, the demographics are poor, underinsured people of color and indigent Americans. So they don't go to see the doctor. So normally when they come in, they're stage 3 or 4 already. So I should have qualified that, you know, before I said that statement. I want to thank you for correcting me. If you have people that go in and see their doctor regularly and the disease is caught early in the process, we can have a wonderful outcome like your mom did. But most of the people that I take care of, and unfortunately most Americans fall under that headline, they don't see their doctor, they ignore warning signs, they continue to engage in behaviors like smoking and using needles, and that's why we have hepatitis C going through the roof in this country, and people are looking, you know, for liver transplants. When they don't see, they're way down the road, stage 3 or stage 4, I got to tell you, they're not going to have an outcome like your wonderful mom had. The only options that are available to them are few and far between, massive doses of radiation and chemotherapy. Surgery is not an option usually at that point, because the lungs, all of our blood goes through our lungs in our body. So what do they have? They have likely metastasis. Okay. And so
I would agree with you. I had a sister-in-law who worked in a bar, and she also smoked for most of her young adult life, and she ended up with emphysema bad enough to where she had to walk around pulling an oxygen cart behind her. And I'll be damned if we didn't watch her sit there and lift the, canal out of her nose and light up
the
cigarette and smoke it.
The cannula.
Why don't you just die now instead of waiting?
Hey.
And she eventually did.
Please. I could regale the audience and you for hours of some of the most, people would say I was a liar. Okay. Here I am giving chemo to a woman that's got lung cancer. Just hurry up, Rob, and hook me up so I can go downstairs and smoke. You know,
The human genome has a wide variety of tolerances and strengths, and so I just wanted to make sure that we pointed it out. There's always a possibility of survival.
Thank you very much for bringing that to my attention.
Thank you, Mike, in Scotts Valley. And, what time is it now? It's 11:29 a.m. on AM 1080 KSCO, your favorite radio station. We're in hour number 2 of the Saturday special. We got about 30 minutes left. And we're going to take a commercial break. Then we're going to come back. I promised we'd go to Annalise, our next caller, but Annalise must have had something else to do because she's not there to take her call. So so we're done with this discussion. But I want to keep Rob on if he will stay with us to talk about the next topic that I really want to talk about, and that is the direction of the dialogue and the discourse. in the United States of America, particularly.
You mean the blood libel? You mean the blood libel?
That could come into it, I guess. But this thing where Keith Olbermann was fired last night, I think that's a signal. I think that's a
heard about this.
And I also, for those of you who listened to last week's Saturday special, where we had Rebecca Costa on, very, very unusual lady, very charismatic woman. I'm interested in some feedback about that because Rebecca has some real interesting ideas about where talk radio needs to go, and I happen to agree with her, but want to find out what you have to say. So stay with us, and we'll be right back after this commercial break.
If you work the land, Webb's Farm Supplies in Soquel and Husqvarna Power Tools can make your work easy. Whether you need professional-grade power for landscape and trees or consumer-grade power for home and garden, Webb's Farm Supplies has world-leading Husqvarna Power Tools. Saws, trimmers, cutters, mowers, and parts for anything and everything new or obsolete. At 5381 Old San Jose Road for over 65 years, it's Webb's Farm Supplies and Husqvarna. Visit webbs-farmsupplies.com or call 475-1020. 475-1020.
If your electricity flows through it, you can save a lot of money by doing it yourself with the help of the experts at Santa Cruz Electronics. Hello, Charlie Friedman here. Listen to the things your friends and neighbors are doing for themselves with the help of Santa Cruz Electronics.
Xbox 360 repair.
Solar energy kits. Musical Tesla coil.
Video output for my home media center.
Building a new server.
Repairing a student radio station.
More RAM and a sound card.
DSL line.
Network printing, scanning, and faxing for dentists.
Replacing antivirus on 12 machines.
Wireless network for court reporter agency.
Diagnosing sound card problem.
Building a 5-kilowatt amplifier.
Ham radio antenna.
If electricity flows through it, you can save a lot of money by doing it yourself with the help of the experts at Santa Cruz Electronics. Voted best electronics store 2 years running. Call Santa Cruz Electronics today at 831-479-5444 or visit at 2808 Soquel Avenue in Santa Cruz. Do it yourself and save money with the help of Santa Cruz Electronics.
This is a Kay's Book update. I got the word that the books will be delivered to KSCO on or about February 7th. Now, that is later than we originally thought, so we obviously will not be able to deliver Kay's signed book.
For KSCO, this is Kay Swirling.
To all of you fine fans who have already purchased online at KSCO.com until February, not January, as announced in my last promo that most of you are tired of hearing. Now, I'm not going to abscond with your money, I promise, but please bear with me and plan to attend the first ever Kay's Book signing at KSCO Studios Saturday, February 12th.
Your electrical problems are no problem when you take direct action and call Direct Electric. Hello, I'm Priscilla Christie.
And I'm Dave Christie. From blown fuses to power outages to remodels, Direct Electric will fix your electrical problems. And Direct Electric will do it right the first time at the right price with no service charge. Listen.
I'm Gretchen from Woodstock Pizza. It's the best pizza in town. We were having problems with some of our electric stuff in our store, and we heard that they are a great business, so we gave them a call. They fixed our problem. They responded immediately, and we were really happy with the work that they did for us. We are friends for life.
Your electrical problems are no problem when you take direct action and call Direct Electric.
If you are in real trouble, ask for Direct Electric's 60-minute emergency service. Direct Electric, that's the name. Service and quality, that's what's in the name. Direct Electric, 425-1407, 425-1407.
Real estate can be really confusing these days, but we make it easy to understand on Open House Radio. Hello, I'm Renee Mello, host of Open House. Each Saturday at 2 p.m., we reach into all the neighborhoods of the local real estate market and talk our way through appraisals, financing, inspections, offers, closings, with all kinds of real estate experts. Join me, Renee Mello, for Open House Radio Saturday, 2 p.m. on KSCO.
Hey, that sounds like a new radio, a real estate radio show. Is that right, Nikki? We're premiering it today? Because I haven't heard that before.
Yep, it's a new one.
Cool. Yeah, so that's a little more than 2 hours from now, 2.5 hours from now. Hey, that's great. Yeah, I'm going to try to tune into that one myself here. I'm fascinated by what's happening with the real estate market. Should be fun. That lady has a great voice. What a great set of pipes, huh? Anyhow, welcome back to hour number two of the KSCO Saturday special. We're going to move on. First thing I've got to say is this is egg on his face, MZ. I mean, when you depend on other people for anything, be prepared to be disappointed. I said we're talking about a Kay's book signing ceremony on February 12th, some sort of an event here. It may happen, but the latest word is that the books are going to be not received, but shipped. You know, tons of books are going to be shipped on or about February 6th. So that means we ain't going to have them on February 6th, like that. Promo, like that last promo, another egg on my face promo, promised. Oy vey. I said, well, when will they arrive here? Well, I can't tell you until they're actually shipped. Then we can give you a pretty good idea of when you'll get. So it might not be February 12th. Speaking of dates, this is a very, very, very special month. In fact, next Saturday, the 29th, we're going to do a Saturday special. It's going to be an extra special Saturday special. It's going to be a look back. It's going to be a retrospective because 2 days after that, the 31st, which doesn't happen to be a Saturday, this is why we're going to be doing this on Saturday. It's not the actual date of the 20th anniversary of this Whirling Family purchase of KSCO back on January 31st, 1991. Where the station was brought back into local ownership and management, of which we are very, very proud to this day. We've got the best group, the best management team, the best people, best on-air staff any radio station can possibly have. And we've come a long way in 20 years. There are just so many people who have made KSCO what it is today and what it used to be. And I'd like for people to send me an email, mz@ksco.com, for people who have been longtime listeners to KSCO, with ideas of what we should do on the Saturday special. And maybe it'll only be a two-hour show. Maybe Tom Quinn has been making noises about donating his time on a perspective show. Tom and Donald and David Biles and so forth. Maybe we'll extend the program. Who knows? It might sort of take over the whole, you know, program schedule next Saturday. I don't know. Time will tell. But at least for 2 hours, we're going to talk with people who have been an integral part of KSCO that you know today and for the first 20 years. And we'll probably play some recordings of particular programs and moments and highlights and so forth. So looking forward to that next Saturday. We were hoping to combine that with a book signing ceremony for my mom's book, but obviously that won't happen till later. And why the hell not just celebrate 20 years of your favorite radio station for the whole year? It doesn't have to be, you know, one weekend or the actual date of the anniversary. It could be a week or two later. Why not the whole year? We need to talk to Billy, our big voice station imaging guy, about creating some group of promos that say, celebrating 20 years of proudly serving the community as a locally owned and operated independent station, AM 1080 KSCO. All right. Now, backing up, those of you who have listened to the Saturday special, which we've been doing since just about the beginning, before I owned the radio station for a couple of years, I was doing something called the Saturday Forum, which was pretty much the same thing as the Saturday Special. And after becoming the owner of the radio station, I used to think it was amusing to have hosts, local hosts from different perspectives, disagreeing with each other and sniping at each other and so forth. And after a while, I realized that I shouldn't feel that way, being the natural instigator type person that I am. it was pretty low class looking back. So, and it does nothing to elevate the debate. So, I really think that what has to happen, it's high time for the communications for talk radio in this country to change, because there is just so much polarity. I've never seen anything like it, and it seems to keep getting worse. People are just arguing. No, can't people just get along? Can't people talk? Can't people solve problems? I'm particularly interested, and I hope we'll get some calls during the next 20 minutes, because that's all we have left for the Saturday special today, on the topic of is it not high time for talk radio to become more of a positive influence that it really should be and it should have been. And that's what we've tried really hard to make KSCO. And I know people are going to say, are you nuts? How can you have someone like Rush Limbaugh on? How can you have these what's left people on and say that you're trying to be, you're trying to improve things when everything just is throwing daggers and nastiness and toxicity at everybody else. So, you know, those of you who are listening to the Saturday special last week, call in and let me know what you think about this host. Because she and I have had extended discussions about the need for some civil talk radio that doesn't have to be boring and NPR-ish and rageaholic-ish, as she characterizes pretty much all of talk radio today, male or female. It's a predominantly male-dominated industry, talk radio, certainly. But she pointed out something that I hadn't even stopped to think about. I knew that there are relatively few female talk show hosts, but every one of them is just like a male talk host. Just, you know, very, very strident and confrontational and nasty and not promoting any kind of solutions or anything like that. So, let's see, we've got our phone number is 479-1080. We've got Christina in Santa Cruz. Annalise has called back. Good. Jim and Marina. And, of course, Rob Roberts. And we do have other lines at 479-1080. So give us a call and please weigh in. I'm particularly interested in what you thought of Rebecca, last week's guest, and whether you feel like she does and like I do, that it's really time for a little bit of class to be injected into talk radio and that the country really needs it. Rob, what do you think? Oh, Rob, are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, what do you think?
I think you're living a dream, man. I don't think that's going to happen.
Oh, okay.
Do you
think it should happen, or do you think that...
Well, absolutely. I mean, I definitely think it should happen, but I just don't think, given the realities of the world in which we live and the history of the United States of America, that it's going to happen. I mean, people believe passionately in their efforts.
I'm not telling people not to believe passionately. I'm telling
people over the years.
Pardon me?
Well, there's been so much talk over the years demonizing people from the left and the right. You know, the people, I mean, the cement is set, man. I just don't think you can, undo it. I mean, the bell has been rung, Michael, and I just don't think you can unring it.
All right, well, let me ask you this. Do you think that there is a place in talk radio for something that is not all rage all the time? And that won't be boring also, that can be popular and and positive. Really?
No.
Fascinating.
And I don't think you can preordain that either. Because,
fascinating.
I mean, I don't think you can just sit up and say, everybody's going to be civil and everybody's going to be benign here during the next 2 hours. I mean, that's something you just can't preordain. I think people, given the many volatile topics that are out there today, I just think people believe so passionately about their, positions. I just don't think that's a realistic expectation.
Okay. All righty. So stay with us here. Christina in Santa Cruz, what do you think about this?
This is Krishna.
Krishna,
can't
okay.
talk for too long because of my terrible voice.
Okay.
I'm falling in love with Robert all over again.
Oh, Rob Roberts, yeah.
I agree with him so much today. I just love the guy. So now, besides that.
Thank you.
Michael.
Yeah.
You're welcome, Robert. You know, I was in love with you for a long, long time.
Then what happened?
Then what happened?
Yeah.
You start getting reasonable and know you can't do this, you can't do that.
Oh, I do everything. I do everything. I just want to provide a conduit for everyone. And
be
I don't...
yourself, Michael.
That is myself.
You are gorgeous. You knew how to tweak people. You knew how to keep the thing lively. It was just wonderful.
Well, I'm keeping it pretty lively now, don't you think?
No, you're talking in a different voice. Your mother keeps it tweaked better. Come on, Robert. I mean, Michael, be yourself.
That is
you
myself.
You have a talent, innate talent. Don't put it to sleep.
So you want me to continue to fan the flames and be an instigator?
You don't have to bring a big blowtorch.
Uh-huh.
You can fan it gently now and then, baby.
Uh-huh.
Keep it sexy. Keep it lively.
Sexy would
Robert
be nice.
Robert, disagree.
Sexy,
what do you think?
Nice.
This country is made up of people. There's a DNA in them.
We need a high-class sex show on KSCO.
Beautiful.
Oh.
What do you think our old folks want? We don't want to die with pipes and with tubes in our noses and faces and ears and eyes in a hospital bed.
Right.
Yeah, we want a genteel talk show, a little bit of fanning here and there.
Right.
Come on. I don't want to hear that kind of talk from you, Michael.
Okay, Krishna, well, listen.
You are innately fabulous. Keep it going. We don't have to scream and rage at each other. We can tweak a little bit here and there to keep the passion going.
I
love Americans for their passion.
This
is what makes this country so fabulous.
I'm not saying don't tweak. Let's just come up with some solutions here.
We come up with solutions, too. And, the more you tweak, solutions come out.
Okay.
The less you tweak, solutions don't happen. Right now we are talking about, yes, do we have to start a limiting end-of-life care if you can't do it on your own dime? We're finally talking about it because guess what? Obama, with whom I don't agree 99% of the time, made it by forcing the issue, by doing autocratic stuff, by not getting people's vote on it, to discuss it finally. We're talking about the pink elephant in the room.
Yeah.
And you will find out that 90% of Americans are reasonable people. But what they don't like is people putting a boot on their face and saying, you got to do it, like they do in Europe, like they do in all these third world countries.
That's right.
And that is what Obama did. And that is why I can't stand the guy. He is an incompetent person.
For a minute, I thought you said third world countries, but I think you meant third world countries.
It's my voice. Please forgive me.
Okay, listen.
But I am passionate. I love passionate people.
I hope you get better really fast.
And Robert is 100% right.
Rob Roberts.
Hey, Michael, I got a quick question for you because you were talking about civility, and you didn't say the word, but I guess you were inferring that civility. You know, I got a question for you. You know what? When President Bush was in the White House, one of the things that was done that I found was absolutely obscene and outrageous is there were some Canadian filmmakers that made a film called Death of a President depicting his assassination. They actually had his face superimposed, and they shot the president and killed him. I got a question for you. What do you think would happen if some filmmaker made a picture today of Obama being assassinated?
A lot worse than what happened then.
I think you would have a racial animus going on in this country and you would start a fire that you couldn't put out.
Wow.
That highlights why I don't think that your idea of civility and talk radio can ever happen, because you have people on the left who are willing to depict the president of the United States being assassinated and nothing is done because the media is controlled largely by leftists in this country, and they accept that as, letting that float in the public domain unattacked. And on the other side of the coin, if their darling, Obama, who is the first black president of the United States, it wasn't him because Bill Clinton was the first black president, as we all know, but besides that, if we were to show a picture of Obama being killed, the country, they'd be rioting in the streets. Is this unequal?
Rob, do you understand why I wanted to hold you over and talk about this subject? I guess I really have that.
Now that Keith Olbermann is gone, I have a question for you. When do you think his lesbian cohort
is going to be given the boot. I'm talking about.
I don't know, but it could be pretty soon, because it's probably just a money thing. Comcast, which is a very big company, which now controls NBC, according to my understanding. They're all about the bottom line, and the bottom line, as I understand it, for MSNBC hasn't been a very deep bottom line. So maybe they need to switch gears, and I think the dismissal of Keith Olbermann signals that.
She might
not be too far behind. Although I'm not advocating that. I would never advocate that anybody be taken off the air ever. That's a business decision based upon to be made by the owner of the company or the person in control of the company. Okay,
no,
that's it.
She's a smooth talker. She's a smooth talking, arrogant, in your face lesbian. By her own account, she comes out and she's in your face. Her lesbianism is part of her her shtick. And, you know, I think it's time for her to go as well. I mean, I don't enjoy Olbermann, and I don't enjoy Maddow.
Okay, so, Rob, we only have 10 minutes left of the program. We have 5 people that we promised to get on. Annalise, go. Make it quick, please.
Well, I don't know if there's any time to say anything.
Please just go.
Okay.
Please.
I actually disagree with Rob, but I'd like to do it politely. I disagree with the concept, first of all, that he said that, you know, you should just let the people of Haiti go to hell. I don't think that's what your mother was advocating. She just said stop sending money, but send people that would work over there with the Haitians to help help those who were so desperately in need.
Annalise, Rob said that he agrees with everything my mom said in the commentary.
Well, if you listen to what he said, it wasn't exactly that. But in any case, the other thing is, I disagree with the fact that you can't say what you have to say, that you can't be upset about things, but you don't have to be screaming and vitriolic about it. You don't have to be unpleasant and coarse about it. I don't think that's necessary. I think it just creates a lot of animosity. Instead of dealing with the issue, you deal with levels of anger. And that, in that sense, I really support your concept of bringing the station to a little higher civility and maybe a little more true sophistication, not superficial, but ways of expressing yourself without being crude and without being hateful about it.
Right.
I don't think that helps. I think that hurts the cause you're looking at.
You've probably never heard Rob Roberts as a talk host, right?
I have heard him.
Oh, do you think he's hateful?
I'm not going to answer that. I just think what I heard this morning is what I'm going to say does not sound helpful.
And I think you live in La La Land, lady.
Yeah, of course. That's exactly what
I
am talking about. I do not live
in
La La Land. I do not accuse you, Rob.
Look at how Sarah Palin has been treated.
You don't.
Look at how Sarah Palin has been treated by people like you over the past year.
I have not treated Sarah Palin in any unpleasant way. I do not live in La La Land, and I appreciate, since you don't know me at all, that you don't start describing things.
They have attacked her personally in the most vitriolic, hateful manner, okay, and she's done nothing other than speak up as a conservative woman. And look at what Congress
I have every appreciation for that.
Condemn it. Then get out of your little cubbyhole and condemn it publicly. That's what
I
we need to do.
I do not condemn her at all.
Condemn her treatment. Condemn the treatment of her. You need to stop talking to me and calling KSDO and get out and say, stop treating Sarah Palin that
I
way.
Never
people
have,
like you,
I
people like you that want the discourse to improve need to do more than just talk about it. You need to get out and condemn the people that attack that.
Maybe you
okay?
don't know that I do. And what I don't appreciate is that you just label everybody that you know nothing about, you know nothing about me, and you start ascribing both titles to me as living in La La Land, and that I do things that I don't, and I don't do things that I know I do. I just do it with a degree of civility. I don't see any point, and that was my point in calling. Of being really vitriolic, I
sound like the Muslims in this country.
I do not agree with you.
All of the Muslims in this country say that Muslim religion is peaceful. Okay, it's not a peaceful religion.
They get out and murder people all the time, but the majority of Muslims in this country don't condemn that. And I'm saying people like you that don't condemn the treatment of Sarah Palin, that just, you know, let it go and don't condemn the haters, okay, you're adding to the fuel to the fire. If you don't, if you want civility to improve, then you need to get out there and condemn the people who mindlessly attack people like Sarah Palin with hatred and vitriol. When you don't say anything, when you don't condemn them publicly and you know, vociferously, then it's going to grow. It's going to continue on.
Okay. Thank you, Annalise, for your call to the Saturday special. Here's Jim and Marina. We only have a few minutes left here. We try to get to everybody. Jim, you're on. Quick, please.
Michael, yeah. I agree that debate needs to be vigorous. People don't want to have a
I didn't say debate. It shouldn't be vigorous. All I said is that it shouldn't be toxic and nasty and accusatory. And let's go somewhere with it.
Those are just catchphrases for people that want to control communication, and that's one thing. Going back to your interview with Costas last week, I thought you weren't employing critical thinking enough, because anyone who wants, because she mentioned Bob O'Reilly and some other ones,
Bill O'Reilly, yeah,
unfactual, whatever.
Yeah.
If you really believe in social evolution, then you have vigorous debates of ideas, and those ideas that are better will rise.
I don't think she was suggesting that there shouldn't be a debate.
Well, I was
just that everything shouldn't be rageaholic radio.
And well,
that's all she says.
But that's
do you disagree with that? Do you think everything should?
The marketplace will decide whether.
Were you bored by that program?
Radio.
Jim, were you bored by that program last week? Did you turn off the radio, or were you riveted? Which one? Or something
bored,
in between?
Huh? But I thought that you could have been much more probing of her assumptions. Like, another assumption she said was that the smartest people in the world were in Washington. And right there, that is an unfactual.
Jeez, I didn't hear that. Is that what she said?
That's what she said. She was just
oh, my God. I must have been asleep, because if she said that, I must have been.
She was talking about the BP oil disaster in the Gulf. And she said, oh, yeah, all the smartest people in the world were in Washington thinking of all these solutions. And right there I said, this lady is not fact-based. And you didn't catch it.
Oh, my.
So, you know.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for bringing that.
I appreciate vigorous debate. And if people.
And I do uncivil, also.
If people are uncivil, then it's kind of like with, I've been reading a little bit of Martin Luther King lately. You take the moral high ground. And you make the assumption that if you're on the moral high ground, regardless of what happens, you maintain your moral high ground, and the good will come out.
Right, Jim. We got to run. Thank you very much for your call. I wish we had more than 3 minutes. Rob and Aptos, real quick. Rob,
this is Mike.
Oh, Mike and Aptos. Okay.
Hey, I heard the lady last week. I totally agree with her. But I think the majority of people, left and right, they don't want to be challenged in their thinking. They want to listen to somebody who's rah-rah and validates, you know, their core beliefs. And I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, and again, left and right, you do not get people that, you know, rise to the top in talk radio that present a moderate, balanced show.
That's true historically. Do you think that someone is looking at me through the video, and I'm getting, this is weird. There's a video screen, and someone is looking at me and smiling, and this is really weird. This is creepy.
Big brother,
what is going on here? What, is this some sort of a Skype thing that's going for next hour or something? Who is that? Anyhow, all right, Rob. So yes, I agree with you that historically the any kind of a program other than Rageaholic wouldn't cut it in talk radio in terms of ratings and advertising revenues and so forth. But do you think that has to be the case?
No. I listen to some of the guys up north, and I listen to you, even though I probably disagree with you 70% of the time,
uh-huh.
because you do allow other people, and you don't get that many left-wing, you know, people calling in, but you allow people to express their opinions. And the guys I listen to up north, it's the same thing. They have a couple of women. They have a couple of people that are way to the left. They shut people down. They don't I have no respect for that form of radio, and that's why I don't listen to that stuff.
Yeah. How did you discover us, real quick?
Yeah, I've been listening to you guys for years. Mm-hmm. Initially on traffic, I used to listen to Rob. I like a balanced show. I'm curious.
We do our best to do that. Okay. Well, thank you very much for weighing in. Apologies to Millie and Tammy and our good friend Richard N. Watsonville. And thank you very much to Rob for staying with us. You're the greatest, Rob. I admire you. You know, thank you so much for staying with us here.
My pleasure.
And hopefully we'll be able to talk to you at least a little bit next week on our 20th anniversary show. Okay. Great.
That would be wonderful.
That's it.
That's all, folks.
KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, San Jose. It is 12 noon. Here's Fox News.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Stanley. President Obama warming up for his Tuesday State of the Union address by pitching freer trade as the prescription for accelerating the sluggishly recovering U.S. economy. He did this in his weekend multimedia speech.
Here's the truth about today's economy. If we're serious about fighting for American jobs and American businesses, one of the most important things we can do is open up more markets to American goods around the world.
More trade with China was the major topic during Chinese President Hu Jintao's D.C. visit this week. And the president talked up exports again yesterday in his visit to a Schenectady, New York GE turbine plant. For the Republicans, it was another attack on the newly enacted health care reform law, which the House voted to repeal this past week. GOP Senator John Barrasso calling for the Senate to follow suit with an up or down repeal vote.
Are you better off or worse off now that the health care law has been on the books for almost a year? Has the cost of your own health insurance gone down?
Many of the bill's provisions, though, haven't kicked in yet. And Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid says he's not going to bring the House repeal bill to the Senate floor for consideration. With tens of millions of iPhones out there and likely to become even more popular when Verizon Wireless becomes a carrier next month, the nation has gone bananas for Apple's apps.
Less than 3 years after its launch, the Apple App Store hitting 10 billion downloads and counting. The store now offers up more than 300,000 different programs that can be used on the iPhone or iPad. The lucky downloader of that milestone app needs to get ready to do a lot of shopping at the iTunes Store, where you can get movies and TV shows along with music files. Apple announcing it's giving him or her a $10,000 iTunes gift certificate. Lillian Wu, Fox News Radio.
Sergeant Shriver's funeral held in his family's Potomac, Maryland church today. Hundreds packing the place to say goodbye to the first Peace Corps director and JFK and RFK brother-in-law who died last Tuesday at age 95. Among other speakers, his 19 grandchildren, one by one, reading short remembrances. Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
You're in the Fox Light.
A classic case of cop and robbers steals the show. In this week's Fox Light DVD release roundup, Hayden Christensen, Paul Walker, and T.I. lead a group of criminals pulling off perfect bank heists in Takers. Of course, they need one last big score, but Matt Dillon is there to put the clamp down. Robert De Niro is a retiring patrol officer asked to review one last case in Stone. Edward Norton is eligible for early release and uses his sexy wife, Mila Jovovich, to add some undue influence. Ryan Reynolds literally wakes up 6 feet under and tries to piece together how he got there and how to get out. In Buried, a dying cell phone and a dwindling oxygen supply don't exactly help. More DVD release news awaits you in the Fox Light blog and podcast at foxnewsradio.com. In New York, Rob Moore, Fox News Talk.
The Fox Light.
Keep listening for more focus from the Fox Light on Fox News Talk.
Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords undergoing several days of evaluations and intensive care at the Texas Medical Center, where she was transferred from Tucson yesterday. Soon, though, intensive rehabilitation work is expected to begin. It was 2 weeks ago today she was shot in the head, 22-year-old Jared Loughner now indicted on charges of trying to kill her. Six-party talks in Istanbul, Turkey on the Iranian nuclear program going nowhere. Iran sitting down with the five permanent members of the U.N. Security Council, including the U.S., but setting a removal of sanctions and an acceptance of Iran's right to enrich uranium for energy production as preconditions to negotiations.
Western diplomats here don't really want to call it a breakdown, but it's clear that they are very disappointed. It's less clear how Iran feels about how these meetings go. Senior administration officials said that Iran's negotiating style was tough and stubborn, and the Iranians basically let it be known that they felt they were being ordered around and lectured to.
Fox's Amy Kellogg in Istanbul. More than 20,000 people on the march in Berlin today calling on the German government to change farming methods after cancer-causing dioxin was found in some eggs, poultry, and pork. Some previously uncollected writings of Beatle John Lennon being turned into a book.
There are places
John Lennon wrote about places, people. He wrote songs, of course, books, and he was a prolific letter writer. For the first time, private letters that Lennon wrote will be collected in a book for publication next year. The rights to about 150 letters sold by Yoko to Orion Books for a reported $1.6 million. There are words and drawings never before seen. Publication is planned next October to coincide with the 50th anniversary of the release of the Beatles' first hit single, Love Me Do. In my life, Bill Fitka, Fox News Radio.
A man in his 60s dying after setting himself on fire in the Saudi Arabian capital, Riyadh. A man in Tunisia did that last month, sparking riots there. Chris Stanley, Fox News Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. You're tuned in to KSCO 1080. I'm Nikki James. Got your forecast here. It looks like we got sunny skies for the weekend. Today's going to be a high of 69 with light winds. Tonight, mostly clear, low of 43 with light winds. And then we've got Sunday, mostly sunny, high of 70 and light winds. Out there on the Monterey Bay, the northeast winds 10 knots, becoming northwest in the afternoon. The wind waves less than 2 feet. A west swell of 7 to 9 feet at 17 seconds. And tonight, the northeast winds 10 knots, wind waves less than 2 feet. A west swell of 7 to 9 feet at 17 seconds.